The headlines: Iran's most senior military commander visits an underground base which houses a huge fleet of cutting-edge Iranian drones. One day ahead of Israel's flag march, Palestinian groups warn that they are ready for confrontation as Israel refuses to change the planned routes of the parade. Also, heavy fighting is underway in eastern Ukraine, where Russian forces are advancing amid a possibility of a partial Ukrainian retreat. Hello and welcome from our headquarters in Tehran. Thank you for joining us. My name is Gizu Mishahmadi, and these are top stories this hour. Iran's most senior military commander has visited one of the secret bases of the army. Chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff of the Armed Forces, Major General Mohammad Baghari, paid a visit to an underground drone base. The top general got a first-hand account of the Iranian army's cutting-edge capabilities in the development of different types of military combat and long-range drones. Images released show the Kaman 12 drone with a flight endurance of 12 hours and capable of carrying four domestically produced bombs and missiles with his secret base. With this secret base that is becoming operational, Iran has turned into the top drone power in the region. Iran's Islamic Revolution Guards Corps has seized two Greek oil tankers in the Persian Gulf waters south of the country. In a statement, the IRGC said the vessels were seized for, quote, violations committed. According to shipping sources, Suez Maxis de la Poston and Prudent Warrior had both loaded at Basra port in Iraq. The latter was carrying oil cargo for the U.S. The incident comes just days after Greece seized oil cargo for off an Iranian flag tanker and moved to deliver the crude to the U.S. The Iranian Foreign Ministry has already summoned the Swiss and Greek Chargé d'Affaires over the issue. Switzerland represents U.S. interests in Iran. The ministry slammed the U.S. violation of the international law and maritime conventions governing free navigation and trade. It also demanded the immediate release of the seized ship and its cargo. Political commentators say Mohammad Marandi believes by seizing the Greek flag tankers, Iran is sending a message to Washington and its allies, warning them against harming Iran's oil trade.
Well, I think it's quite obvious. The Iranians are sending a message to NATO that if you touch our oil, you will pay the price. And the price of oil will go through the roof. The market is very tight. There is a shortage of oil, and the world economy is heading towards a major recession. So if the Americans and the Europeans want to make the situation much worse, then they could continue pushing the globe towards further tension. If they want to ease the oil market, then the only way forward is to respect international law and their piracy and to refrain from touching Iranian oil, Iranian assets, and which include Iranian tankers and super tankers.
The fate of the 2015 Iran deal remains far from clear as talks between Tehran and the P4+1 group are stalled. As we see in this next report, Tehran says the main remaining issue in the talks is about its right to economic and trade benefits under the JCPOA. Talks to revive the 2015 Iran deal, known as the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action, remain stalled after a year of intensive diplomacy. Senior diplomats from Iran and the P4+1 group, namely Russia, China, Britain, France, and Germany, have held many rounds of talks in the Austrian capital, Vienna. The diplomatic initiative to restore the deal has become a long and complex saga. Whether negotiators will finally cross the finishing line is anyone's guess. All parties have acknowledged that there are a few remaining gaps that need to be bridged between Washington and Tehran before the deal emerges. But what's keeping the talks from further progress? It has been repeatedly said that Washington's refusal to remove Iran's Islamic Revolution Guards Corps from its terrorism blacklist is the most important sticking point. But Iran's top diplomat has given a vastly different account of what is blocking the path of the negotiations. Foreign Minister Hossein Amir Abdollahian told the World Economic Forum on Thursday that the issue of the IRGC being on the U.S. blacklist of terrorist groups is a minor issue that has been exaggerated and magnified by the Israeli lobby, and that Iran's top priority is the interests of the nation. He also warned that American interests and foreign policy have been taken hostage by the Israeli regime. Israel has made no secret of its opposition to the 2015 deal and diplomacy with Iran. It has been engaged in a not-so-covert campaign to derail the Vienna negotiations. Foreign Minister Hossein Amir Abdollahian stresses that what has caused a pause in the negotiations is Iran's economic and trade demands, and the most important remaining issue is the effective removal of economic sanctions. The top diplomat says a maximum pressure campaign launched by former U.S. President Donald Trump must end. He says the window of diplomacy is still open, adding that Americans know what they need to do. U.S. President Joe Biden was a vociferous critic of Trump's unilateral withdrawal from the JCPOA in May 2018. During his presidential campaign, he pledged to work to rejoin the agreement. But has he done so? Iran's top diplomat says that has not been the case so far.
The fact that the United States, under the Biden administration, has failed to return to compliance with the agreement shows that the United States is not really interested in a rules-based international order, because one of the most basic pillars of international law, by the United States' own agreement, are United Nations Security Council resolutions. And again, it's binding.
Amir Abdollahian told the World Economic Forum that Biden's policy towards Iran has not been different from Trump's hostile approach. The Iranian foreign minister said the U.S. president must decide now whether he wants to waste time or courageously return to complying with U.S. commitments under the 2015 deal. His comments come after U.S. Special Envoy for Iran, Robert Malley, said the prospects of a return to the Iran nuclear deal are tenuous at best. Malley made the remarks on the same day that the Biden administration unveiled new sanctions on Iran. The U.S. Special Envoy for Iran noted, however, that Washington still believes it is in the national security interests of the United States to try to salvage the 2015 agreement. The future of the hard-earned international deal remains unclear and could unravel completely if Washington fails to return to its commitments. Meanwhile, Israel is doing its utmost to prevent any deal between Washington and Iran, just as it did before the JCPOA came into existence in 2015.
No group and no block of people has more power and influence in the United States than Jewish leaders in shaping how Americans think and American attitudes. And that's not only true, but it's especially true with regard to Iran. The American media is overwhelmingly very hostile to Iran. And this is in keeping with what Jewish leaders and all those who support Israel really want.
Will the administration of Joe Biden be able to withstand pressure exerted by the Israeli lobby and act based on America's national interests? Palestinian resistance groups warn Israel ahead of the regime's provocative flag march in occupied Al-Quds. Hamas, the Islamic Jihad, and other Palestinian groups say they would retaliate if Israel does not change the planned route of the parade and tries to approach Al-Aqsa Mosque. People's Youth Movement in Al-Quds say that it wants Sunday to be remembered as Palestinian Flag Day by raising the national flag on every house, square, and street. Israeli groups hold annual events to commemorate the occupation of the Old City and other Palestinian neighborhoods in 1967. A similar rally last year ended with Israel's crackdown and retaliatory rocket attacks by Hamas, which led to an 11-day war on Gaza. Regime officials say a series of raids and arrests are expected across the occupied territories ahead of the planned march. For more on that, we're joined by Mona Kendall, our correspondent who's joining us live from Ramallah. Mona, tell us more about this planned march and what we are expecting to happen.
Well, first of all, there were numerous efforts in order to cancel this Israeli flag march, but it failed. Now, the Palestinian groups and the Hamas movement are demanding the Israeli regime to change the route of the flag march, not to allow the Israeli settlers to enter and march through the narrowest streets of the old town of Al-Quds, the eastern part of Al-Quds, where Palestinians live there, and not to come and raid the Al-Aqsa Mosque complex, Al-Haram al-Sharif, that is known by the Israelis as the Western Wall area. Up till the moment, there were statements from the Israeli police, the Israeli Knesset members, Israeli lawmakers, of course, are saying that the Hamas threats did not intimidate the Israelis, and they will continue. They will go ahead with the march. Nothing will change. Now, there is this Israeli far-right-wing lawmaker, Ben-Gavir. This Israeli settler is well-known for trying every time to storm the Al-Aqsa Mosque complex with a number of Israeli settlers under the protection of Israeli police. This time, he's demanding that he has the right to at least raid the Al-Aqsa Mosque complex even before the start of the flag march, because he's saying that at the time, Arab lawmakers, Palestinian lawmakers, or in the Israeli Knesset, and Palestinians would be allowed to be there in the Bab al-Amud area, the Damascus Gate, then he has the right to raid the Al-Aqsa Mosque complex. Up to the moment, there are warnings from the Hamas movement, the other Palestinian groups, that in case this march did not change its route, and that the Israeli settlers enter the Al-Aqsa Mosque complex or even the narrow streets of the Muslim neighborhoods in the old town of Al-Quds, then there would be maybe another round of fighting. The Hamas movement and the Palestinians would not remain silent. We have to wait until tomorrow to see what's going on, whether the march would be only touring the western part of the Al-Quds, or they would defy these warnings and would march through the narrow streets of the old town of Al-Quds.
Thank you very much. That was our correspondent, Mona Kendall, live from Ramallah. Meanwhile, a pro-Palestinian Church of England priest has faced a disciplinary tribunal in London over the past week for criticizing Israel and for what he calls Christian Zionist support for it. This comes after renewed complaints of anti-Semitism against revered Stefan Sizer by a Jewish group in Britain, Said Pouraza reports.
What they lack in number, they make up for in solidarity. Supporters of a British pro-Palestine priest facing a week-long Church of England tribunal here for his views on Israel. 68-year-old Reverend Stephen Sizer, a retired Anglican vicar known for his opposition to Christian Zionism, a belief among some Christians that the establishment of Israel in 1948 was in accordance with biblical prophecy, accused of anti-Semitism.
We're concerned about how people who are speaking up against the crimes against humanity that are being committed by apartheid Israel are being targeted. And people and organizations in this country that are apologists for apartheid, that are actually supportive of the apartheid state of Israel, are actually using regulatory processes to actually target individuals and stop any kind of dissent from being said.
One such group, the Pro-Israel Board of Deputies of British Jews, that's accused Dr. Sizer of making public statements that conflicts with the so-called International Holocaust Remembrance Alliance definition of anti-Semitism adopted by the Church of England. The definition conflates harsh criticism of Israel with anti-Semitism.
There's no exemption from their attempt to shut down pro-Palestinian discourse. And the reason is very simple. They've lost the debate. If they were winning the debate, they wouldn't be trying to shut down Stephen Sizer. But they know that public opinion, because of what Israel does and because of the Palestinian resistance, they know that they're very, very unpopular in public opinion.
And it's not the first time this is happening. Dr. Sizer faced similar accusations in 2013, but was exonerated in return for not posting about Palestine on social media. Nearly 10 years later, he's once again the subject of a pro-Israel witch hunt.
I think it's because Reverend Dr. Stephen Sizer was not obedient, and he continued to advocate for Palestine and against the crimes of the State of Israel, and they decided to bring him to heel in an exemplary way. You know, they've pretty much cleaned out the Labour Party. They've got scalps there. They've attacked people in academia. They got people fired in Bristol. They've even tried to take on musicians like Lowkey.
A final verdict is expected in the coming weeks, but what this case and similar ones show, these activists say, is the length to which the British state will go in silencing all criticism of Israel and its apartheid against Palestinians. Saeed Bourizza, London.
That brings us to the end of this edition of World News. Stay tuned.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
torture.
Depression is a mood disorder that causes a persistent feeling of sadness and loss of interest. It affects how you feel, think, and behave, and can lead to a variety of emotional and physical problems. Patients may have trouble doing normal day-to-day activities and could sometimes even feel as if life isn't worth living. I'm Zarin Shajeri, and this is Aperture. Depression may require long-term treatment with a host of pills, antidepressants, anxiolytics, neuroleptics, and tranquilizers, but sometimes the cure could be much worse than the ailment. Thousands of documented cases prove that the prescription of such drugs have led to suicide, acts of violence, and even murder. Death by prescription reveals the shocking truth about psychotropic drugs and a healthcare system that perhaps undermines the potential dangers of such medication. Stay with us for this part of the documentary.
Mark was 48 years old when he committed suicide in October 2013. He was suffering from recurring back pain and had had an operation, but the cure was worse than the ailment. It hit him hard, and he was prescribed antidepressants. Mark was the father of two children and had never had suicidal thoughts before, but in less than a week, the medication sent him into madness. His sister Florence has still not recovered from it. Is an antidepressant responsible for the death of Florence's brother? These heartbreaking events are echoed in thousands of documented cases across the world. Psychotropic drugs are under the spotlight. Antidepressants, anxiolytics, neuroleptics, sleeping pills, and tranquilizers are supposed to stitch together the fragilities of the soul. They save many lives. But can they also lead to suicide or even murder? What are these psychotropic medications that are sometimes held responsible for acts of violence? First off are antidepressants, the grandfather of the new wave being Prozac. This antidepressant is supposed to act upon depressive states, deep sadness, psychic fatigue, and anxiety. It should give a mood boost in order to bring the patient back to a stable condition. In France, it's taken by at least 6 million people. Next, we have the benzodiazepines, with the most widespread examples being anxiolytic drugs such as Valium or Xanax, but also a high number of sleeping pills. They treat states of anxiety, panic attacks, and insomnia. Unlike antidepressants, they bring the mood down to calm the anxiety. It's a bestseller in France. 11.5 million people take it each year, more than one in four adults. Finally, there are various tranquilizers and powerful neuroleptics, which influence the nerves. Nobody disagrees with how useful these medications are, as they act upon serotonin, a neurotransmitter that regulates the mood. But depending on individuals, they can short-circuit the brain, which can be dangerous and even fatal. In France, Professor Evan is one of the only doctors to sound the alarm. He has compiled or translated a handful of reports and studies that warn against psychotropic drugs. At what moment do these medications become dangerous? For benzodiazepines, whose effects are immediate, it's during the first days of the treatment, especially when coming off the medication. For a large number of people, anxiolytics or sleeping pills can be more addictive than heroin, which is why the treatment shouldn't last longer than a few weeks. As for antidepressants, which don't take effect until 2 or 3 weeks of use, murder or suicide can occur during the first few days of treatment, whenever the dosage is increased or when the medications are stopped. When this happens, a devastating rebound effect can occur that places some patients in a state that they feel compelled to continue. Before taking his life, Florence's brother was right at the beginning of his treatment. In his letter, he speaks of having acid in his body. Are prescriptions given too readily in France? To allow us to find out, we went to 6 randomly chosen medical clinics equipped with a hidden camera. 95% of psychotropic medication is supplied by general practitioners. Our scenario will be simple, going through a rough patch due to losing a job,
5 minutes and 32 seconds was all it took to get a prescription of anxiolytics during the first consultation. The second doctor hands over a prescription of antidepressants, which he confirms have virtually no side effects whatsoever. The third is not strictly in favor of psychotropic medication, but strangely, he still supplies Seroplex, an antidepressant. Only the fourth finds it too early to give a psychotropic medication in such a case. Antihistamines are also used to treat allergies, but they can facilitate sleep. The fifth proposes an anxiolytic. She suggests a half tablet, then a whole, then two, then up to four a day. The prescription lasts 3 months, whereas the recommended limit is 8 weeks due to the extremely addictive effects of Xanax. If that isn't enough, she suggests adding an antidepressant. But the record was beaten by the last doctor, who proposed both an anxiolytic and an antidepressant in only 2 minutes. Everybody's happy, except when psychotropic medication drives somebody mad. Here's a brilliant young girl, Aurélie. 6 years ago, her treatment transformed her into a destructive machine. Aurélie could have died or gone insane. She attempted suicide and was then committed to a psychiatric hospital. 6 years ago, with a master's degree in economics, she found a job in New York. She worked hard, went out often, and was close to burnout. She returned to Paris. Her general practitioner was absent, so she met with a psychiatrist. The peaceful young girl was in a rage, and it worried her. So she consulted other doctors. Aurélie had a strong reaction to the dosage increase. A suicide attempt, followed by a psychiatric hospital. She therefore decides to stop the treatment. The violent urges disappeared immediately, but it would take her 2 years to fully recover. Today, Aurélie has rebuilt her life. She lives in London, where she has become a painter. But she still wants to know what really happened. She therefore meets with a reputed British psychiatrist, David Healy. For the pharmaceutical industry, this man is a menace. For years, he has denounced psychotropic medication as dangerous, and his expertise has led to major criticism for the leading laboratories. He claims that these pills are useful but dangerous.
Well, first of all, the pills can be helpful. I use these pills to treat people, but they don't suit everyone. And when they don't suit you, they can definitely be poisonous. Yeah. They can make you want to kill yourself. They can make you want to kill other people. And they can generally cause you to hear voices and become crazy.
Yeah.
There's certainly about 1 in 20 people who go on the pills, at least, have what you could call an extreme reaction to them. So that's actually fairly common, okay? Roughly half of the people that go on these pills, they just aren't suited to them. They have a bad reaction, but they don't have an extreme reaction.
If someone has a side effect of the medication, they can say, listen, it's because you had a depression at the beginning, that's why you were like this. So they make you feel that it's because of your first state that you feel so bad. It's not because of the medication.
And this is the problem. This is where things really go wrong, where once you've been put on the pills, doctors don't recognize when they have made things worse. What they say is it's down to doctors. We make the pills, it's down to doctors to use them wisely. If things go wrong, it's the doctor's fault, okay, not ours. Now, the pharmaceutical industry have as much control of the situation as the Soviet Union used to have during the 1960s.
Aurélie comes out of the interview with the impression that she was the victim of a medical error. She thinks about her psychiatrist with a heavy heart. So she will meet up with her 6 years later to finally turn the page. The psychiatrist concedes an error in the diagnosis, but the whole system leads to an increase of psychotropic consumption. It's in the interest of pharmaceutical companies to have a high number of ill people, as psychotropic medication represents a global market of tens of billions of dollars. As the number one user in the world of such medication, France is a true cash register. These happiness pills are making the pharmaceutical companies smile. Their profits exceed those of the petroleum companies. In the United States, this exaggerated medicalization has a particular resonance. As the years went by, unexplained suicides by children taking antidepressants or anxiolytics hit the public opinion. Here, a 10-year-old child is phoning the emergency services. His 14-year-old sister has attempted suicide, having been on Paxil for just a few days, an antidepressant known in France under the name of Seroxat.
This is 911. Who is this? Where is your sister? What is she trying to do? Take pills?
What? No, my dad's home now.
Hold on, tell me!
GSK, the laboratory that manufactures Paxil, managed to conceal explosive studies conducted by its own experts. Following a court trial, the authorities obliged GSK to reveal the studies. They showed that the medication increased suicidal thoughts or acts by up to 8 times. Massacres perpetrated by teenagers should also be mentioned. 9 out of 10 killers were on a cocktail of psychotropic medication. Despite thousands of people that call for action against the pharmaceutical companies, psychotropic medication remains a bestseller in the U.S. and its business as usual. Every year, the powerful American Psychiatric Association organizes the most important symposium on the planet. Over 5 days, 15,000 psychiatrists from across the globe attend several conferences. The pharmaceutical industry struck gold. It largely finances the event by promoting its latest medications, and the stands invade an entire hall. For the occasion, even the Vice President of the USA, Joe Biden, is here. This reflects the importance of the event. Leading the American Psychiatric Association is Jeffrey Lieberman, certainly the most influential psychiatrist on the planet. During the press conference, we asked him questions regarding the dangers of psychotropic medication.
These are not dangerous drugs by and large, or certainly no more dangerous than those which are used routinely for other non-psychiatric types of disorders. The side effects should never be a deterrent for somebody who genuinely suffers from depression getting treatment.
This is a disease, a brain disorder, with about a 5% mortality rate. Depression is a disorder where you cannot experience emotion because you feel dead inside. You feel hopeless, helpless, and you would be dead, but you probably don't have the wherewithal to figure out how to commit suicide.
A lot of the over-exaggeration about fears of side effects and are promulgated by people who either don't know or don't want to know, and they foment this.
Is Jeffrey Lieberman best positioned to answer about this medication? The list of pharmaceutical companies that finance him is infinite. We can better understand why Jeffrey Lieberman doesn't much like party poopers, the hundreds of protesters who regularly come to disturb the great gathering of psychiatry. This includes a multitude of associations, as well as the Citizens Commission on Human Rights, which is run by Scientologists. Today's slogan, "Stop Drugging Our Soldiers." A wave of unexpected suicides effectively shook the U.S. Army. And the protesters blame the antidepressants that are administered in 9 out of 10 cases.
22 U.S. veterans are committing suicide every single day. There are more active duty military dying from suicide in 2012 than on the battlefield. There are 49 international drug regulatory warnings on antidepressants that caution against aggression, mania, suicide, in some cases homicidal ideation. It's outrageous. So it's not as if the psychiatrists don't know.
Faced with the protesters, the mainly foreign psychiatrists are somewhat skeptical.
What I just discussed a little with them was that there seems to be sometimes it's difficult to know if there's a, causative relationship? If you have a progression in the disease and you are medicated too, is it the medication or is it the disease itself?
I read stories that quite a few veterans committed suicide last year, but I was wondering how many suicides have been prevented by taking antidepressants. So I suppose you can't cure everything with just taking a pill. You should give the psychotherapy as well, but I'm not sure if the antidepressants are only responsible for the increased suicide rate.
In the Congress room, many conferences take place one after another, but nobody is dealing with the dangers of antidepressants. One of them is led by Anthony Rothschild, a psychiatrist well known for his successful books on psychotropic drugs. The great specialist is holding a debate on the adaptation of treatments depending on the illness. But not once does he say that antidepressants should not be prescribed. Our question is straightforward.
It seems that there is a lot of danger with antidepressants. What do you think about this? Like suicide or, murders?
No. I mean, I don't know what you're talking about, but I just told you there's no reliable scientific evidence that antidepressants cause people to commit murder or any other crime or suicide.
So how come that on boxes?
Right, this is not serious, okay?
Is this a surprising reaction? Anthony Rothschild also has conflicts of interest with an impressive number of pharmaceutical companies.
So I told you what I thought. You're going to keep asking me the same question.
Okay.
Well, you got my quote, all right?
Okay, very good.
How can such things still be said in this day and age when on all the stands promoting psychotropic medication, whole boards are covered by signs warning of side effects? Among the several side effects, the risk of suicide or violent behavior is prioritized by all. These warnings are a legal obligation enforced by medical organizations. But how much are these warnings worth next to the publicity hype from the pharmaceutical companies?
When you're depressed, where do you want to go? Nowhere. Who do you feel like seeing? No one. Depression hurts in so many ways.
These ads, banned in France, reach tens of millions of households in the United States, one of the rare countries where the promotion of medication is allowed. For the promoters of these ads, a new customer is a captive customer.
Thank you.
Is there any other way to get familiar with Islam besides mainstream media? Try IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
This is for a better life.
فرمود بعثت لأتمم مكارم الأخلاق.
The Holy Prophet of Islam says, "I have been sent to complete noble manners."
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. Dear brothers and sisters, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Welcome to For a Better Life. This is Javed Akbari speaking. Well, today we are going to talk about closeness and proximity to Allah, which is the goal of life, of course. And it's the goal of creation. It's the goal for which we have been created by Allah. And if this goal is achieved, a better life and obviously a felicitous and a happy life will be achieved. Every individual is in search of a better life, in search of happiness. And happiness, real happiness, if you look at the works authored by prominent scholars, by prominent mufassirin, exegetes of the Holy Quran, we see that happiness or a happy life is achieved in the afterworld. But this world is also has a role to play. It facilitates a happy life, but we have to make use of this world to achieve that happy life, because this world is transient, this world is fleeting, And in this temporary world and this transient world, you know, eternal happiness is meaningless and we cannot achieve it in this world. So we have to understand that eternal happiness or eternal felicity is something that is achieved in the afterworld, because that world is permanent. It is the permanent abode, the permanent realm, and therein we will live forever. So, brothers and sisters, man should make every effort possible to achieve closeness to Allah. There is no doubt that true and sincere iman and closeness to Allah will definitely have its impacts on a person's life. It will have qualitative and quantitative impact on our life. If we have true faith in Allah, if we are sincere and honest in our faithfulness, and then if we get closeness to Allah, then we will live a happy life. Of course, it will have its impacts on our life, even on our material life. In this world, we will live a happy life. If a person or a society obeys Allah and gets his closeness, gets pleasure, of course, divine pleasure, he will have more and more blessings. He will receive more bounties and blessings from Allah. Let's have a break. We will be back.
We were given so many prizes. We changed the desert into oases. We built buildings of different lengths and sizes. And we felt so very satisfied. We bought and bought and couldn't stop buying. We gave charity to the poor cause we couldn't stand the crying. We thought we paid our dues, but in fact, to ourselves we're just lying. Oh, I'm walking with my head lowered for my race. Yes, it's easy to blame everything on the West, when in fact our focus should be on ourselves. Is it satisfied? Is Allah satisfied? Is Allah satisfied?
The Quran says, وَلَوْ أَنَّ أَهْلَ الْقُرَىٰ آمَنُوا وَاتَّقُوا لَفَتَحْنَا عَلَيْهِمْ بركات من السماء والأرض ولكن كذبوا فأخذناهم بما كانوا يكسبون. If the people of the towns had believed and guarded against evil, واتقوا, we would certainly have opened up for them blessings from the heaven and the earth. لفتحنا عليهم بركات من السماء والأرض. But they rejected. ولكن كذبوا. So we overtook them for what they had earned. فَأَخَذْنَاهُمْ بِمَا كَانُوا يَكْسِبُونَ. So verse 96 of chapter 7. The Prophet Nuh alayhi salatu wasalam told his people, فَقُلْتُ اسْتَغْفِرُوا رَبَّكُمْ إِنَّهُ كَانَ غَفَّارًا. I said, ask for forgiveness of your Lord. Surely he is the most forgiving. And these are some verses which definitely indicate that if people maintain piety, if the people have true faith, وَلَوْ أَنَّ أَهْلَ الْقُرَىٰ آمَنُوا وَاتَّقَوْا, and if people have true and sincere faith in Allah, then Allah will shower His blessings on them. يُرْسِلُ السَّمَاءَ عَلَيْكُمْ مِدْرَارًا, He will send down upon you the cloud, pouring down abundance of rain. And he will help you with wealth and sons and make for you gardens and make for you rivers. And these are verses of the Holy Quran which clearly indicate and which clearly suggest that if we have true faith and belief in Allah, then Allah will shower his abundance and blessings upon us. And of course, this is all about material blessings, which are the results of faith and closeness to Allah. Abundance comes when a society or an individual truly believes in Allah. Iman and sincere belief in Allah will definitely have social effects as well. Those verses which I recited deal with material blessings. But what about social blessings, social effects? If a society obeys Allah and follows His laws, the divine laws, there will be no oppression. every person will have the opportunity to have a comfortable life and to enjoy the results and the benefits of his activities. God says in verse 25 of chapter 57 that certainly we sent our apostles with clear arguments. لَقَدْ أَرْسَلْنَا رَسُولَنَا بِالْبَيِّنَاتِ with clear arguments and sent down with them the book وَأَنْزَلْنَا مَعْهُمُ الْكِتَابِ وَالْمِيزَانِ that men may conduct themselves with equity. لِيَقُومَ النَّاسِ بِالْقِسْطِ The book of God and the signs, God's apostles, the messengers, were sent down only to help us live balanced life, live with justice and equity and equality.
Please send any suggestion, any idea to our email that is englishradio@irib.ir.
One of the aims of the prophethood is to establish social justice. Qist. In such societies, of course, people can be comfortable and they can easily perform their religious duties and reach divine pleasure. There is no doubt about it. And of course, taqwa, iman, piety, God consciousness and belief in Allah help us achieve perfection, help us achieve, you know, closeness to Allah. And obstacles in the process of self-improvement are removed, you know. The freedom from obstacles is one of the effects of iman, true iman, of closeness to Allah and achieving perfection. And of course, to be religious means to be devoted to Allah and divine values, of course. And when you are devoted to Allah and when you are dedicated, then of course, obstacles and the process of self-improvement will be removed. So, definitely, freedom from obstacles means that we should be free from false gods in the society. We should be free from bad habits, from bad customs, and from bad social norms and laws and superstitions. We have to get rid of these things. And of course, in the Holy Quran, we find verses that one of the jobs and one of the works, or maybe one of the purposes for which God sent prophets to humanity is to free them, is to free people from bad habits, to free people from superstitions and from ugly behaviors, ugly things. And it's only in the absence of such things, it's only by getting rid of superstitions and false beliefs and false gods that man can achieve perfection, and then he can achieve closeness to Allah, which is, of course, the ultimate goal for which a man has been created. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Every grain of sand in every desert land he knows. Every shade of palm, every closed hand he knows. Every sparkling tear on every eyelash he knows. Every thought I have and every word I share he knows. Allah knows.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Our website is www.parstoday.com/en. This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.